This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll get back to the Julio Jones stuff coming up in a little bit, plus the Tuesday Top 10. And Meta World Peace, formerly known as Ron Artest, is scheduled to join us later on this hour. Talk about what's going on in the NBA. You can continue to always join the conversation on Twitter at Morrow Middays, online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can leave a comment for the show there at our show page. Or you can always give us a call, 843-721-9500. Coming up in just a moment, Memorial Day is the day. We always say that's the first post of baseball. You got to wait till Memorial Day before you can look at standing stats, start to really worry about some teams or players. Well, yesterday was Memorial Day, so who in baseball at this point should be concerned? Because we're a third of the way through the baseball season. It's getting late early at this point, in the words of Yogi Berra. Right, no longer can you say, it's early. Well, they'll turn it around. They'll be fine. At this point now, right, we're a third of the way through. We're 2 months in. We're into June now. It's the summer months. You got to start figuring something. Trade deadline is coming up in the next 2 months. So, you know, that's your chance to try to make some moves, make some changes in the next 2 months here. You got to figure out what you can do to improve and start working on this turnaround, because we're a third of the way home already in the baseball season. But yesterday was Memorial Day, and Memorial Day is interesting. Look, all of our holidays have shifted from what they originally were. Halloween wasn't originally about the candy. Christmas wasn't originally about the gifts. Right? Even like Easter wasn't originally about the Easter egg hunt, the little kids finding chocolate eggs. But that's what the holidays have become. And much like Memorial Day has just become like a day off, almost like the kickoff to summer, in fact. And maybe it's the first time you got to go to the beach. Right? I went to the beach yesterday. I was over at the beach. Maybe it was the first time you went to the beach. You have a day off. Yesterday was nice. The weekend wasn't that great. Right, so Memorial Day has really become like a celebration. You have a cookout, and you wish people like, hey, have a happy Memorial Day. But when you get down to the crux of it, the genesis, the origin of the day, the holiday, it's not a happy thing. So it's always an awkward thing, you know? And I'm guilty of it too. Happy Memorial Day weekend. Happy holiday, you know, but it's not a joyous celebration. In fact, it's not a celebration at all. It's more of a remembrance. Or an, you know, to honor, to remember those who have fallen in the line of battle to help protect us and keep us safe and to keep this country the greatest in the world. Sure, we have issues. We're not a perfect country, but we're still the best. Because I couldn't have this job in any other country. There are no other countries that have jobs of sports broadcasting like this, to this extent, where this is all day. I come here, I talk sports with you, go home, watch sports, broadcast sport. That's all. It's great. So I'm always very grateful, thankful, blessed for what I'm able to do, and I'm able to do it because of the men and women that continue to fight for this country, that have fallen for this country, that continue to go out there and fight, right? And so I am very grateful, I'm very thankful to everyone who has ever served, who is currently serving, who will ever serve to protect this country, because I've said it before, and I can admit that I couldn't do it. I was never interested in getting to the armed services because I couldn't handle it. So for those that can, you're certainly more of a man or a woman than I ever could be, and I appreciate everyone. And yesterday was a day that as you're out at the beach and you're celebrating and, you know, it's become a joyous day, not for those who have lost people in the war. Right? You see the photos of widows sleeping with the gravestone, you know, in the graveyard of their husbands. Right? It's not a joyous day for them. It's a joyous day for the rest of us because of the sacrifice that many people have made over the years. And I posted a photo yesterday on Twitter, and it was from last year, Memorial Day. Last year was, you know, at this time was pretty early in the pandemic. So people were locked down. And I went home. We weren't doing the show at the time. We were on a hiatus around here. So I went home up to Connecticut to go spend time with my family. I figure, you know, if I got to be stuck inside, I might as well go spend it with my family. And so Memorial Day, like, we ended up having a little cookout just ourselves, grilling out in the backyard. But not much was going on, so I went for a walk that day with my mother, and we wound up in a graveyard. And you could see, you know, it's very touching or sobering when you wind up in a cemetery on Memorial Day or Memorial Day weekend. And some of you may have been in one this past weekend to maybe go visit somebody in your family that, you know, you remember on Memorial Day. But to see all the American flags lined up and to see, and not all those people with the American flags necessarily lost their lives in the battle, but they were obviously veterans that are no longer with us. And to see the amount of people that, you know, have fought for us, for our freedoms, to protect us. And it's not missed on me to be in this area with so many veterans around here and how big the military is in this portion of the country and how many of our listeners are veterans or have somebody in their family who is currently serving or has served before. I mean, I work over at the Citadel, so, you know, I know it well. A lot of those kids go into the different armed services. So I'm always very thankful, not only on Memorial Day, not only on these various holidays throughout the years, but each and every day. I'm always very appreciative for those that have fought for this country, who will continue to fight, who down the road will choose to pick up and fight for our freedom, to allow me to do this, to allow us to sit at home and watch sports, and then for me to come on the radio and talk about it and make a living doing it. It's remarkable. And it's only possible because of people like that. And the people that we remember in a day like yesterday, Memorial Day, who tragically, unfortunately, you know, lost their lives in the line of battle, but did so, though, so that we can enjoy the freedoms and the lives that we have. So Memorial Day is kind of awkward in that sense because you wish people, you know, happy Memorial Day, and you're out celebrating, but it's not really a celebratory thing. So I did just want to say that while I had the opportunity, while I have the microphone. I did just want to say thank you to everybody that has ever fought to keep this country safe, to keep this the great country that it is. Yes, we're not perfect. Yes, we have things to work on. We also have so many positives in this country, and it's because of the people that have fought for those things. All right. With that said, let's take Memorial Day and try to turn it, if possible, into a sports topic. Because, as I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, really, in Major League Baseball, when I was working in baseball as well, right, you'd always hear people say, "Ah, wait till Memorial Day. Don't worry. Right? We're struggling. Right? It's okay. Wait till Memorial Day, and then let's see where we are. Right? We can't stress until Memorial Day." Well, here we are. Memorial Day just passed. It's June 1st now. We're into the summer months. And 60% of teams in first place on June 1st have gone on to win the division. So 60% of the teams, if you're in first place right now, you have a 60% chance of holding on to that first place lead. Let's run through some of the teams division by division to see at this point, a third of the way through the baseball season, who should be concerned and who should feel like what they have accomplished so far is for real. Right, that it's not just a fast start, that they are here to stay. In the AL East, the Tampa Bay Rays certainly are for real. In fact, they probably will wind up with the best record in the AL. They have the best record in the AL right now. I think they'll keep it up. They just finished the month of May going 22-6. They won 15 of 16 games at one point. It was their second best month in franchise history. And the Tampa Bay Rays have the best run differential, second best run differential in the AL. They got off to a little bit of a slow start. They went through their rut. Now they played really good baseball in May, and this is just what the Tampa Bay Rays do. And I think they will stick around in the AL East. The Boston Red Sox, I think, are for real. Third in the league in runs scored. They have a good starting rotation, a surprise starting rotation that's leading them. Four of their five starting pitchers have an earned run average under four. And they are a good road team. Boston has won two-thirds of their games on the road. Or I should say, to make that clearer, they've won two-thirds of their road games. So they're good on the road, have a top-three offense, in the AL, a top-five pitching staff. So Boston's been a bit of a surprise this year, but I don't think this is one of those just, you know, fluky starts. And the Red Sox are known for their June swoons, so get back to me in 30 days, but I think the Red Sox are hanging around, and they are a playoff team this year. Meanwhile, the Yankees should be concerned. The Yankees have the second-worst performing offense in the league. They're hitting .230 as a team. Look at the Yankees' starting lineup. More than half of the guys are hitting below the Mendoza line. It's remarkable. They've had some injuries. Judge and Stanton. And Judge is one of the few guys hitting. They're going to get some pitchers back, but the Yankees should be concerned. If you watch that team, they're not constructed well. They'll be okay, But right now, they're 29-25, only four games over 500. They've lost four in a row. They just got swept by the Tigers, one of the worst teams in the league. They're quickly falling behind. They're six games out of first now, and they play the Rays next couple of nights. If they lose the next 2 days to the Rays, right, they'll be eight games out of first place and just over 500. I think the Yankees should be concerned with this start. No longer is it, it's early, we'll turn it around. No, the Yankees, when you watch them, they look like a flawed team. And meanwhile, in the AL East, I think the Toronto Blue Jays are the sleeping giant. They're fourth in the AL, or fourth in all of the league, in runs scored. They have a plus 42 run differential, despite being only two games over 500. And their bullpen has performed pretty well this year. I think Toronto, they're in fourth place right now. They're only two games over 500, but I think they really turn it on the rest of the way. In the AL Central, the Chicago White Sox, to me, are really the only team worth watching in this division. They're plus 80 in the run differential, which is the stat I cite the most when talking baseball. All the other teams in that division have a minus run differential. The White Sox are 12 games over 500. They have a four-game lead. They're the only team to worry about in that division. They're third in the league in earned run average. They got a potent lineup, even though they're missing two of their better hitters and still scoring a bunch of runs. And you look at the rest of that division, the Royals, they got off to that fast start. Then we saw, it was just a fast start. The Royals aren't very good. The Indians, they're in second place. They're over 500. I don't think it'll last too long. They have too many holes in their lineup. The rotation isn't good enough. They're being carried by their bullpen right now. That will catch up to them. And they're negative in run differential, despite playing one of the easiest schedules in baseball. And yet they're still only five games over 500, negative run differential. The Indians are going to start to fade. The White Sox will run away with that division. And the only other team, look out for the Minnesota Twins. If I had to choose a team to be this year's Washington Nationals, remember the Nationals were 19-31 when they won the World Series a couple years ago? The Twins right now are 22-31, and they have won seven of their last 10 games. They're starting to get hot. They lead the league in home runs. They've won the division the last 2 years. I could see the Twins making one of those great turnarounds and competing for a wild card spot. They're in fourth place right now. They're 11 games out of first. You're probably not thinking about the Twins. But in the AL Central, it's the White Sox and everybody else. But amongst the everybody else, I think the Twins could start to emerge from that group in the AL Central. In the AL West, even though the Oakland A's have been in first place really almost the entire year, I think they're pretenders. And I picked Oakland to win the division at the beginning of the year. But now as I watch them, I see that they're not quite the team I was expecting. Now, they do have a first place lead in the West. They're six games over 500. But they're not playing great baseball right now, and they also have a negative run differential. I don't trust Oakland. I think they start to fade. Meanwhile, Houston, they've been up and down, and it seems like they'll get hot, and it's like, okay, here they go. I'm waiting for Houston to really take off, the Houston Astros. And it pains me because of the cheating scandal. I will never root for the Houston Astros. But they're 29-24 right now. But the big thing, again, run differential. Let me cite that stat again because they're plus 57, which is third best in the AL. So even though they're only five games over 500, they have played like one of the best teams in the league. They're number one in the league in runs scored, even without the trash cans. Right? They have the only positive run differential in their own division. I think the Astros will take over this division, and at a certain point, they will really take off. I've been waiting for it. And I think the Oakland A's will start to fade. In the NL, obviously the focus around here is the NL East. I think the Mets are for real. They're in first place, 3.5-game lead. They're 26-20, and they've done it with so many injuries. At one point, the Mets had 17 guys on the injured list. They had almost an entire roster on the injured list, and they're not much healthier right now. They hope to get Syndergaard back at some point, maybe August. They hope to get Carlos Carrasco back. So there's two starting pitchers right there, and yet, even with those injuries, the Mets still have the second-best earned run average in the league, and they're missing two of their starters. Missing a couple guys in the bullpen and a lot of guys in the lineup. Look at that Mets lineup. I mean, they played the Braves this past weekend, only one game because of the weather, and it was a terrible game, especially if you're a Braves fan. But look at the Mets lineup. It is not even a Triple-A lineup. Their lineup is putrid, and yet somehow they're still winning. They've won five in a row. They're six games over 500. They should only get healthier and therefore better as the season moves along. And when they're healthy, on paper, this Mets team is really good. So I think the Mets are for real, and I think the Braves should be concerned. Atlanta is in second place. They're one game under 500. They have an even run differential. And the Braves, we've been waiting for them to shake off this slow start and get going because on paper, the Braves seem to be a pretty darn good team as well this year. And I thought the Braves and the Mets would be two of the best teams in the NL. And the Mets may hold up their side of the bargain. I don't know if the Braves will. And some of the Braves' moves, whether it's Charlie Morton, Drew Smyly, the Ozuna contract, haven't quite worked out like they were expecting. And we're just waiting for Atlanta to shake this off and get going. But Soraka's out for the year, and I'm concerned about the starting pitching for Atlanta. I'm sure Freddie Freeman will really get it going. He's been playing better the last couple of weeks. Right, and some of these other guys, Dansby Swanson has started to heat up a little bit. Austin Riley has been really good. They'll start scoring more runs. The pitching is a concern, and the Braves, just whatever it is, they're missing something. They're not playing well enough. They don't look like the team from the last couple of years. At this point, I think it is fair to be concerned about the future of this team for the 2021 season. In the NL Central, the Cubs are in first place, which seems like a surprise. But at this point, I've come around on them. They have the only positive run differential in the division. I think they are for real. Kyle Hendricks has started to pitch better. Craig Kimbrell came out of nowhere. He's having a resurgence. He's been great this year. And the Cubs pitching staff has been strong. I think the Cubs are a true contender. I didn't see it this year. I thought they were really going to take a step back. They've surprised me. I think the Cardinals are a contender as well. I picked the Cardinals to win that division and told you they're a sleeper World Series team. They're in second place, a half game behind Chicago. I think those are the two teams that will hang around in the NL Central. Milwaukee is only a game and a half back. I think they will start to fade. They don't have enough offense, and their pitching won't hold up either. They've gotten some great starting pitching this year, but I think it's a little fraudulent. I think there'll be a regression to the mean. They have some guys overachieving in that rotation. And lastly, in the NL West, the Giants are another one of those surprise teams, much like the Cubs and the Red Sox this year. And somehow the Giants, I do think, are legit. I don't really know how they're doing it. They have the best record in the NL. And you look at that team, if you're an average baseball fan, you probably couldn't name five guys on the Giants, right? Unless you're a fan of a team in that division that plays against them. Even if you're a Braves fan, I don't know if you can name half of the Giants lineup or, you know, even a couple of their starting pitchers. But they have a good manager in Gabe Kapler who has gotten the most out of them. They're playing good baseball. And most importantly, they have done well against the Padres and the Dodgers. You have to win in your division to win the division. So I think the Giants do hang around. This is not some sort of fluke. The Padres, obviously, are very good. They'll be there in the end. And the Dodgers, even though they're in third place, I have continued to say all year, they're still the best team in the NL. In fact, they have the second-best run differential in the NL. They have performed better than their record. And they're still 10 games over 500. So the Dodgers will be just fine. They'll be there at the end of the year. Bauer has been much better than I thought. Clayton Kershaw has had a good season so far. Walker Buehler, they've gotten, you know, Mookie Betts at some point may turn it around. Some of the batters have to get it going. They brought in Pujols thinking that will help, but the pitching staff has been strong, and the Dodgers have played better than the record. And that's how, if you're following Major League Baseball, here we are at Memorial Day. This is the big day. Okay, you look at the standings. Who should be worried? Who should feel good? That's how I see it. I think teams like the Indians, the A's, they'll start to fade. The Brewers, I think the Braves should be concerned. The fact that they're still under 500 at this point. I think the Yankees should be concerned. And I think the Tampa Bay Rays will really take off. I mean, they already have, but they'll continue. I think the Twins will come back towards the top of the AL. I think the Astros at some point will really start playing like one of the best teams in baseball. And it's really going to come down to the AL East has four good teams. The NL West has three good teams. That's about it. All the other divisions are pretty crappy. They all have about one team to hang their hat on. But it's the NL West has three of the best teams, probably the three best teams in the NL. The AL East has, outside of the White Sox, maybe the Astros, probably the three best teams in the AL. And that's what it's going to come down. It's going to come down to the East Coast in the AL against the West Coast in the NL. But now at this point, a third of the way through the season, you have to start paying attention to some stats, to some standings, seeing how you can turn things around. Because it's no longer, you know, early in the season that, oh, it's okay, it's just a slow start. Now at this point, you know, 2 months in, this is just kind of who you are. Coming up, our Tuesday Top 10. We do it every week. There was a big reunion over the weekend. So we'll tie it to our Tuesday Top 10 when we come back. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do it. Because, I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all of these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
We rented a truck and a Sammy to go. Travel down the road.
Coming up, our Tuesday Top 10 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll get back to everything going on with the NBA playoffs and the fans acting out with Meta World Peace, who's supposed to be joining us later on this hour. Hey, you ever have a problem around the house? You think, man, I can't fix that. Don't worry, because the Canty Foundation Specialist can. Check them out online, cantycanfixit.com, or give them a call, 843-484-3625. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer warranted solutions and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. They can level concrete, repair the concrete, whether it's a sidewalk, a driveway, a pool deck. They do commercial foundations. They waterproof the basement. They install gutters, coat the garage floor. They do everything. The Canty Foundation Specialist, online at CantyCanFixIt.com. And protect your toes, because, especially this time of year, you're out in the yard running around barefoot. Kids are out playing in the yard. I saw some kids playing wiffle ball all weekend long. It was great. Took me back to when I was growing up. Miss those days. But if you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, driveway, patio, pool deck, Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of your little toes. Contact them for your free estimate. Canty Foundation Specialists. Online at CantyCanFixIt.com. 843-484-3625. I go out for, depending on how I'm feeling that day and what the weather's like, either a walk, a jog, a run. I'm trying to do it every day now. I'm trying to get into, you know, better shape after the pandemic. Put on, the pandemic 15 or something. And it was great to see over the weekend. You know, because we hear so much about baseball's hurting and people aren't playing the sport as much. But every day I went out, I saw kids in multiple places, different parks around where I live, playing wiffle ball, and it was great. And it took me back. Oh, the memories came flooding back, because that's all me and my buddies did from about fifth grade to early high school even. You know, you get more busy. You get busier in high school. You're playing sports through the high school. But, man, that our summers, that's all we would do. In my front yard, a couple of my buddies had great wiffle ball fields in their backyards, the perfect setup, right, where you got the bushes or the left. You got a fence over. Oh, just it's a self-made wiffle ball field in the backyard. That's literally all for hours every day. Just play wiffle ball. So it was great to see kids out there playing wiffle ball over the weekend. I wish I was still of age. I could go over there and play with them. In fact, at this point, they're probably better than me anyways if I went and played with them. All right, over the weekend, not only were kids playing wiffle ball in the neighborhood, but also we got the Friends reunion on HBO Max, and I watched it over the weekend. So we do a Tuesday Top 10 every week, and I got to be honest, we may have done this list at some point. So I may be dusting off an old one, and if we have, I'm sure it's different from when I did this list originally a couple of years ago. But we do a top 10 list every week. We just had the big Friends reunion on HBO Max. Everyone was going crazy about it. So, for this Tuesday Top 10, the 10 best sitcoms, according to me, I guess. And it can't be denied. The 10 best sitcoms, it's our Tuesday Top 10.
Time for the Tuesday Top 10, where we rank anything from quarterbacks to cheeseburgers right here on the Morrow Midday Show. Interested?
Now, plenty of honorable mentions to choose from. I won't even get to them all. But obviously, it's hard to narrow it down to 10. And you could tell as we go through this, you could tell that the majority of these are the shows I have grown up with. I'm not going to go back to The Honeymooners or Leave It to Be. I didn't really watch. I've seen reruns, but I never really got into those shows. Number 10, with that said, Golden Girls. I enjoy the show. I don't watch it a ton. Every once in a while, it's on late TV land. I'll watch it. You know, I used to watch it in bed before I go to bed. It helped me go to sleep. That's not a criticism. It's a good show. And it was really the first of its kind to build the sitcom around an all-female cast like that. We had other shows built around females, but to have the four main leads like that, it's what led to Sex and the City and Desperate Housewives and Orange is the New Black. And back in the 80s to do it, it was really something, you know, there wasn't much like that. And not only that, but the women that they built the show around were already in their 50s and 60s. And it's a funny show, and it still holds up today, 35 years later. It's why it's still on TV each night. And it's got a real, not even a cult following, just a large following. They still have Golden Girls cruises. People will go on cruises with other Golden Girl fans. People still love this show. And if you're of a certain age, right, you grew up watching it years ago, and you continue to watch it. Right, my grandmother still loves watching Golden Girls. It's a great show. Number 10 on the list. Number 9 of the best sitcoms, I go with Sanford and Son. It's my favorite of that era, of like the 70s shows. And you had two African Americans as the two leads, which again, going back at that time, that was unique to television. And you had Red Fox, who, you know, a great comedian, and one of the best theme songs of all time. I'll watch Sanford and Son from time to time when it's on TV. I'll throw it on. It's on like Cozy TV, that random channel, and I'll watch it. Still makes me laugh. Sanford and Son, number 9. Number 8 of the best sitcoms, this is where I put Friends. I like Friends. Friends is the perfect for anybody who has to travel for work. Maybe you can relate. You know, I spend time, not so much now, but back when I was living in Florida, I used to do the math on it. I spent about a third of my year in hotel rooms. And Friends is just always on. It's always on TBS. It's on during the day. And you're sitting around in a hotel room in a random town with nothing to do. So you always appreciated it, right? You turn on TBS, Friends is on, right? It's not my favorite show, but it's a lot better than some of the other stuff on during the daytime. And that's how I was watching Friends. And it's good. I like it. I don't think it's great. People say it's right up there at Seinfeld. No, it's not. My big issue is the whole coffee thing, right? And they even make fun of it in one of the episodes of Friends. That coffee shop was originally a bar. And then the bar closed up. And they said, what are we going to do now? Who's going to be drinking coffee? Right? They like mock themselves. Because the whole show is, who hangs out in a coffee house like that? People hang out in a, all the other shows are hanging out in bars. Friends, they're just drinking coffee. Right? You got five friends, whatever it is, sitting around drinking coffee every day. I'd rather see, you know, hang out, like Cheers, hang out in a bar. That's a little more realistic to me. Anyways, Friends is number 8. A little more dramatic than your Seinfelds, than your other sitcoms. I put them at 8. The Simpsons, even though it's a cartoon, I'm going to include it. I put it at number 7. Any show, even a cartoon, that can go on for over 30 years, and for the amount of things that they've brought to mainstream and the predictions that they seemingly have made, you have to include The Simpsons. Now, the first 15 years, a lot better than the next 15 years. But growing up, Simpsons in our household, my brothers and I, even as kids, that was like the number one show. And we had to make sure we watched it every Sunday night, right? Get your homework done, shower, get ready for the week of school so that you could watch The Simpsons on Fox at 8 o'clock every Sunday night. Simpsons, number 7. Number 6, I go with King of Queens, which I think is kind of an underrated sitcom. I think it's great to have Jerry Stiller, right? Ben Stiller's father, Jerry Stiller, is fantastic. The whole crew, in fact. Patton Oswalt, right before he really kind of hit it big, was just a bit character. He's great. Obviously, the main characters, everything about it. It's a funny show. King of Queens, I always thought it was kind of underrated. I think it got overshadowed by Everybody Loves Raymond at the time. I think King of Queens is a better show. I think it's funny. I think Doug's more relatable. Number 5 is Curb Your Enthusiasm. What's great about that, and yes, I'm a big Seinfeld guy, so of course I have to include Curb. And it's different than your normal shows because it's on HBO and they swear and they get into all sorts of different topics. But what's great about Curb is not only the fantastic supporting cast like Jeff Garlin and Ted Danson, but also that it is mostly ad-libbed. Larry will outline what needs to happen in the scene, but he doesn't write dialogue. And then these funny people just get together and act out these scenes. So if you ever watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, I think it's hilarious. A lot of people think it's funnier than Seinfeld. And all of it is really just done kind of on the fly. He comes up with a quite the outline. You know, this has to happen in the scene. However we get to that point, that's up to you. But we have to accomplish this in the scene. And then they just turn on the cameras, they ad-lib, they joke around with each other, and they make a great show. Number 4, the best sitcoms, is Arrested Development. Now, original Arrested Development. They brought it back to Netflix. Wasn't nearly as good. But Arrested Development was ahead of its time. It was such a smart show that I feel like people didn't get it. And the critics loved the show, but the ratings weren't all that great. Right, so people that supposedly know TV knew, yeah, this is a good show. But I think it was just ahead of its time almost 20 years ago that people watching it on TV, it's so quick. The writing is so good, you miss half the jokes. Right, you have to rewind it and think, wait a minute, what did he say? You know, what was the joke there? I missed that one. It's so smart, great cast. Will Arnett went on to have a good career. Jason Bateman, that was like the real resurrection of his career. Now he's in everything. The guy that played David Cross, fantastic, great comedian. Tony Hale as Buster. Oh, great cast. Jeffrey Tambor, great show. Number 4. Number 3 is The Office. The Office is number 3 on my list. It should have finished after Michael Scott left. The last 2 seasons should have never occurred. I didn't even like the first season with The Office. The first season was just a remake, the shot-for-shot remake of the original Ricky Gervais version. And then they realized, you know what, this isn't really going to work in this country. We need to make Michael Scott more of a better boss in the sense that fans could actually get behind him because he was so, you hated him in the first season. He was so unlikable. So they made him more goofy and showed his better qualities. And seasons like 3 to 6, really, some of the best TV, The Office. Hilarious. Great cast. Right? The fact that you can have about 20 different characters, maybe not that many, 12 different characters working in that office, and they all have great lines and different scenes where they steal the show, and you could talk to an Office fan, and they will each tell you a different favorite character. That's tough to do. Right? A lot of times, it's based around one character. the appeal of Friends was that it was a real ensemble cast. I mean, you had six people that were all equally the stars of the show, similar to The Office. Obviously, it's mostly about Michael, and it's mostly about Jim and Pam, but all the other characters, Dwight as well, but the other characters do a great job in their roles. Number two, I'll say MASH, best sitcoms of all time. Now, I was never into the show, but I respect that it was the number one most watched finale. I mean, the millions of people that tuned in. It's wildly popular, and the fact that you did it all while based on a war is impressive. That you can make a sitcom, a funny show based around war, is impressive to pull off and to do it for 11 seasons. So MASH I put number two, but number one, of course, you know, if you listen to the show, you know where we're going here. Number one is Seinfeld. The amount of terms in our vernacular that come from that show is higher than you would think. Everything in life relates to things in that show. That's what we do around here on the Mora Midday Show. And to do it all, a show about nothing, right? And yet to be so good, so clever, creative, to be so relatable, Seinfeld, number one. And there you go. My list of the 10 best sitcoms. Can't be debated. Golden Girls, Sanford and Son, Friends, Simpsons, King of Queens, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Arrested Development, The Office, MASH, and Seinfeld, number one.
Okay, you're going to get an earful from Bobby.
For which one?
For leaving off the Beverly Hillbillies and for making Seinfeld number one.
Ugh.
And how dare you leave off three of the best of the last, you know, few decades.
What do you got?
Okay, That 70s Show.
Good. I always liked That 70s Show. Wouldn't crack the top 10, but it was good.
The Big Bang Theory.
No.
Yes.
Get that out of here.
That is a cool show.
While you were gone.
And my all-time favorite, yeah. Married with Children.
Yeah. Married with Children is another good honorable mention. Yeah,
that was one that would not get made today.
Big Bang Theory, though, no. I won't even bring it up. Not even an honorable mention.
Hit too close to home for you?
No, while you were gone for the past 2 weeks, this has become a big debate. I have said Sheldon Cooper is the worst TV character to ever get multiple shows. And speaking of Bobby, he loves Big Bang Theory, and he loves Sheldon, and we got into it out at the PGA Championship. And he hasn't let it go, but that's where we differ. I like Big Bang Theory. It's a good show. I would never consider it top 10, but I do like it. I like watching it. I've never said anything bad about the show, just Sheldon Cooper. I think he's a terrible character. He's a terrible character on a good show. It's a solid show. Not top 10 worthy, Big Bang Theory. Top 10 list. I knew Joe would have a few exceptions. By the way, I watched the Friends reunion over the weekend. And unfortunately, people are making fun of Matt LeBlanc, who played Joey, because, you know, back in Friends, he was like the suave guy. Now they've developed all these memes about him because he looks a lot different now. He's put on some pounds, as anybody does when you get older. I mean, he's in his 50s now, right? So the problem, and I've said this before in the show, is when you have the belly, like Matt LeBlanc has developed, you can't do the tuck-in shirt. I know he's trying to look good, but it only makes the belly look worse. So he was sitting around, he's resting his arms on his stomach, and he's sitting on the couch, and he's leaning back, and the gut is protruding. People are making fun of him online because, you know, you watched him as Joey, and he was like the eye candy of the show. And now you see him, and he actually kind of looked the worst of all of them. Ross looked exactly the same. All the women looked the same. They can thank their doctors. And even Matt Perry, for all the issues he's had, he even looked pretty good. But Matt LeBlanc was the one that unfortunately looked the most different, and unfortunately the internet had their way with them. They were making fun of him all weekend.
And since you threw in The Simpsons, you know, yeah. An animated show,
yeah.
Then I'm going to have to counter that with South Park.
Yeah, that's fair. I was hesitant. You really shouldn't include cartoons. They're not sitcoms, they're cartoons. But Simpsons I was going to make the exception for. South Park, for similar reasons, could also be considered. By the way, last thing on the whole Friends reunion, it's funny how great things could come together. And maybe this could be some sort of uplifting advice or anecdotes for you in your own life. But the way Friends, and maybe you weren't a Friends fan, but obviously it's a wildly successful, or was a wildly successful show. But the way it all came together, like for example, David Schwimmer had a failed, he was done with TV. He had so many failed pilots and sitcoms. He said, no more. I'm not doing TV anymore. And he went to go do theater in Chicago. And he turned down Friends originally. They contacted him, and they said, we wrote this character, Ross, with you in mind. They said, no, I don't want to do TV. I've been, you know, once bitten, twice shy. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm now into theater. And it took some real convincing, and they convinced him. And finally, he said, okay, fine. I'll come back to TV to give this show, you know, a chance. Let's see. And obviously, we know what happened with Friends. Even Matt LeBlanc, he was a model in New York. He was walking down the street. He sees a beautiful woman. So he turns around, you know, to get another look at the woman as she's walking by him. She turns around to get a look at him. He was a good-looking dude. And they laugh about it. Well, she's an actress on a way to an audition. And she said, you should come with me. And he did, just so he could spend more time with this woman and get to know her. And that was the start of his acting career. He was a model. He wasn't an actor. He wound up there. He met her manager. And her manager said, hey, you know what? You'd be great for commercials. And that's how he got his start, which eventually led to Friends. And then the night before his audition for Friends, he was with some buddies, and they said, you're auditioning for a show called Friends. You got to know what it's like to hang out with friends, so let's go out drinking. And they did. And Matt LeBlanc had a little too fun of a night. So that night, he fell down, and he hit his head on the toilet, and he had a big gash on his nose. And he had to show up at the audition the next day with a big gash on his nose, and he still got the part. And even like Jennifer Aniston was in another show, she asked the producers to let her go from that one TV show to go do Friends. So it's just interesting. You always hear these stories, how things come together. And it's like the butterfly effect, right? Imagine if David Schwimmer was stubborn and said, no, I'm never returning to TV, right? Or Jennifer Aniston couldn't get out of her contract with the other TV show and couldn't do Friends. Or Matt LeBlanc didn't see a beautiful woman walking down the street and think, you know what? I'm going to go follow her to her audition. It's always interesting how these things come together. All right, coming up, we're scheduled to be joined by Meta World Peace. You know, there's a lot of issues, of course, with everything going on with these NBA playoff games. Well, nobody could talk about it better than the man formerly known as Ron Artest, who was involved in the Malice at the Palace all those years ago. We'll try to catch up with Meta when we come back and talk about the issues in the NBA postseason. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Hey, are you stuck in your current position with no room to grow? Are you underpaid, undervalued, maybe overworked? Maybe you just need a new job. If so, you can always call Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. They're local, family-owned. Kearney & Sons, they value family time and have done so for over 37 years. They believe you should earn while you learn. And they have training programs to get you where you want to be in your career today. Kearney & Sons, 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. They're now hiring all full-time positions. And it's great because they offer optional four-day work weeks. Benefits include insurance, 401k, paid time off, vacation, and a signing bonus up to $5,000. Call Kearney & Sons, 72 Degrees, and start taking your career to new heights while still having time for the most important thing, your family. Call Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating today. 843-762-4304. Kearney & Sons 72 Degrees Air Conditioning and Heating. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. If you just head over to our show page, and there you can find the latest versions of the show podcasted. You can always leave a comment for the show, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com, as well as through TuneIn Radio, or even just your smart speaker. Just tell it to play ESPN Radio Charleston. Set it up so that it can do so. And throughout the afternoon, we've talked about the issues that the NBA seems to be facing with their fans' behavior at these playoff games. We also just ran through the 10 best sitcoms of all time for our Tuesday Top 10 because of the Friends reunion that occurred over the weekend. So if you missed that list, which cannot be debated, the definitive list of the 10 best sitcoms, you can find that on demand. Just ran through that last segment. But earlier we were talking about the issues that the NBA has had this postseason with poor fan behavior, whether it's dropping popcorn on the head of Russell Westbrook on his way to the locker room in Philadelphia, or spitting on Trae Young while he inbounds the ball at the sideline at MSG in New York, or even John Morant's family being subjected to racial slurs by the fans at Utah during that series, or most recently Kyrie Irving having a water bottle thrown at him in his way towards the locker room the other night in Boston as well. And it seems like not necessarily copycat crimes, right? Well, but when one happens, even with the punishment, others now continue to act that way. It's almost makes some believe it's acceptable behavior, and it's certainly not. Now, as I said earlier, I can't defend these people's actions. I won't support what they're doing, but I can understand maybe why it's happening. And we tried to lay out those reasons earlier, in part just because this is something that has always happened. We played the audio earlier from Kyrie Irving, in which he talked about it after the bottle was thrown in his direction. And Kyrie referenced what it was like, you know, going to the theater back in the days. And you could go back years ago, hundreds of years ago, to fans acting a similar way towards entertainers when they were not happy with the outcome of the entertainment. They'd go to a play at a theater, and if it was going in a direction they wouldn't like, they would get very unhappy, whether it was throwing tomatoes. They would even threaten the performers, like, no, we want you to do it this way. And it's similar here, where it's, I guess, kind of just part of us as human nature. Not all of us. I could go to a basketball game and not throw a water bottle, but for some people, right, they feel like they can act out in that way when something happens in their form of entertainment that they don't like. But there's a lot that goes into it as well, and none of this makes it right. Right, let me add that disclaimer once again. I'm not supporting these guys. I'm not trying to explain away their actions. But I think a lot goes into this, whether it's the fact that fans haven't been able to go to games for a number of months, for over a year, whether it's now with social media, fans may feel more connected to these athletes than ever before, thinking that they can therefore treat them however they wish, or a sense of entitlement because of the tickets that have been purchased, or because of the access you have at basketball games that differs from, say, football or baseball games. I think there's a lot that goes into it. It's not just one simple thing or another, but you hope that these fans can cut it out because it's taking away from the NBA playoffs, and it's not a good look for really anyone involved. That it seems like every night in these NBA playoffs, there's a new example of something occurring with poor behavior from fans at these games. Joining us now is a man who spent 17 years in the NBA. He won a title with the Lakers a decade ago, and he's a founder of X vs. X Sports, which you can find online at xvsxsports.com. It's Meta World Peace. Meta, good afternoon, or good morning, where you are. Thanks for joining us. How you doing?
Everything is great. How you doing?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Before we get into the NBA playoffs, I want to get into what you've been up to lately with this X vs. X Sports, because I think it's a very interesting idea. People can check it out online, xvsxsports.com. But tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, man. X vs. X Sports, it's a platform to help basketball players create basketball games in their communities. You sign up to the app, X vs. X Sports, on the App Store or Google Play. Invite your friends, play games, put in a score, and then what happens is locally you can be recognized for being the best in your area. And then what we do is we invite you to local showcase games. You could be a recreational player or you could be an elite basketball player. If you're a recreational player, you could be recognized for being one of the best recreational players in your area. If you're an elite basketball player, then you will have opportunities through getting exposure, you know, on our platform.
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea, and it adds, as you said, exposure, gives you bragging rights, regardless of the level you're playing at. Check it out online, xvsxsports.com. Get the app. It's a cool thing. Meta, I know you've been following the NBA playoffs. Before we get to the actual basketball on the court, unfortunately, the playoffs have been taken away by the behavior of some bad fans at these different arenas, and that's become the big talking point. As you watch these games and you see one fan dump popcorn on Westbrook and another fan throw a water bottle at Kyrie Irving, I know you've been talking about it at various outlets, but what are your feelings? What are your thoughts when you see fans act this way at these basketball games?
You know, I just think, like, after the pandemic, people are a little stressed. You know, I think the fans are, into the game. You know, when you're a fan, you know, sometimes you say, I'm going to the game and we're going to have a great time and this guy sucks and, you know, we're the best. And sometimes, you know, there's no rule book to how to be a fan, right? So sometimes you get beside yourself. Now, if you're throwing water bottles, you should not be throwing a water bottle, you know, in an American sports arena. You know, so that's more, that's not justified. Spitting, that's not justified. Popcorn, you know what? Not justified, but not really worth a lifetime ban. But you know what? Don't throw popcorn on our athletes. It's just not. You can't do it. You know, running on a court, touching the backboard, we've seen that before, right? So I'm not going to get too consumed with talking about someone running on the court and touching a backboard. I think that's funny, honestly. But what's not funny was the water bottle. That was really dangerous. And then the spitting, that's really disrespectful. And also dangerous because it's a pandemic.
Yeah, certainly. And you've been on the wrong side of that, where, of course, we all think back to what happened in Detroit, where somebody threw a drink at you when you were laying on the scores table. And I'm not saying we need another incident like that, but when you see something like that, that at the time, I'm sure, was a wake-up to fans like, wait a minute, right? These aren't guys that we can just mess with. There are repercussions for our actions. What do you think could be done nowadays with these fans to try to keep this from happening? Because it seems like every night we're getting a new story of a fan throwing something at a different NBA player.
You know what? I think, obviously, I was a part of the brawl. And the fan that hit me with the cup, you know, we're friends now. But when I spoke to him about it, you know, he apologized. He was just saying he was a little drunk. And that's what happens sometimes at arenas. You know, we got people that's excited. We want the fans to stay excited about the game. You know, I mean, some of the language, we could do without. But you know what? That's been happening for years. You know, that's become a part of the sport. I mean, I don't want a boring arena. I want a hostile arena. Just don't want people hitting. I think any hitting, physical objects, that's not called for. Any bad language. Bad language is not like you effing suck. You know, bad language is like if you're saying, you know, something that could be racially, you know, negative. Mm-hmm. You know, that's bad language, right? So, you know, you want to think about that when you're going into an arena, because I don't think the athletes are coming to an arena to hear bad language. You know, obviously nobody's perfect. You're not going to get it's not going to be perfect, but I just think it's something to think about. You know, fans need to think about what's happening, you know, when you're coming into an arena.
I want to ask you about the teams in just a moment, but my last question on this was when you were involved in Michigan when that happened, was it just your reaction, right? John Green, as you said, you're friends with him now, but he throws the Diet Coke, I think it was, and hits you on the scores table. Was that just your visceral reaction at that time that you didn't even really think about it? You just responded, somebody threw something at you, you were going to go, you know, defend yourself?
Yeah, you know, I wasn't about defending him. I wasn't going to defend myself because it was nothing to defend. It was only a cup. It wasn't like it was someone in front of me. The bigger issue to me was the disrespect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the biggest issue. That's never happened before. You know, where someone just threw something at me. So I was just like, you know, yeah, I'm not going to let you just throw a cup. That was the ultimate form of disrespect.
Right.
You know, and although it was just a cup, you don't prepare. You don't go into an arena and say, okay, I'm going to get hit with a cup today, and I'm just going to tell that fan that he's a bad boy. Right? You go into the arena ready to play a basketball game, and you're ready to get – you're going into that arena with a killer mindset. They say Jordan got the killer instinct. Well, what does that mean? That means you're going into an arena with a killer instinct to play basketball, right? And that instinct translates to anything – that's happening within those 2 hours, you know, that you're playing basketball. So that was, you know, I was in it. I was in a zone. We was up 20 points against Detroit.
Yeah.
You know, and I was in a zone competitively competing. And then when I got hit, you know, I was very, very highly, highly upset.
Yeah, I can imagine so. Talking with Meta World Peace, unfortunately, we're short on time, so I only got about 2 minutes left with you, but I want to ask you about the actual playoffs. Anthony Davis has this injury. We don't know what it means for his future in terms of this playoff series with the Suns. How concerned would you be for the Lakers if Anthony Davis is banged up or if he can't play in Game 5?
It's going to be really interesting. Obviously, it's going to be tough to win without Anthony. You know, it's going to be tough to win without Anthony, and we're just going to have to get through it. These injuries happen. I'm so happy that he won a title. You know, I'm so happy that he won a title. Because imagine if we don't win last year and then we get injured this year. So we got one. He did what he had to do. He came to L.A. and won a title. Some people come to L.A. and they don't win a title. So Anthony's good in my book.
Yeah, and you did the same thing. You went to L.A., won a title there. He's met a world peace, 17 years in the NBA, and now check out xversusxsports.com. He's the founder of it, and it's a really cool idea for basketball players throughout the country. Check it out. Get the app as well. Meta, appreciate the time and the insight, and enjoy the rest of the NBA postseason.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Meta World Peace. Wish we had more time with him, but it is interesting to get his thoughts on this situation because nobody knows better what it's like to be on the receiving end of the behavior, reaction, treatment from the fans. The Meta World Peace, the man formerly known as Ron Artest. Check out xversusxsports.com, his latest venture. Hour 3 coming up next. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.